365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierre LaFond Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CSU Channel Islands, today our guests are Tina Itkonen, who is a professor of education and political science, and Liz King. How did I pronounce Liz King? Perfect. Who is a professor of art at CSU. Channel Islands. But before we get to these professors, we have a special guest with us today, Ted Simmons, a longtime Montecito resident. In fact, he's been here so long, I think he's one of the first people to come to Montecito. Is that true, Ted?
I was just after the earth cooled.
It was, and it's very impressive that he actually is one of the few people I know that actually is a local, a native. To be a native, I think you have to have been here for 18 generations.
I stopped at five.
Five.
So 1851.
So Ted, the reason Ted is here today is he's lonely, but the other reason he's here is Ted has. Been the driving force behind a fantastic event this Saturday in the Montecito Upper Village, which is to celebrate the wonderful stores, retail, food that we have in Montecito, and to help them recover from what has been an awful period for them because of both the fire and the mud flow and the long-term closure. So thank you, Ted, and it's really a great thing you're doing. So tell us a little bit about the event.
Well, thanks so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to tell people about this. It's going to be a great event. But first of all, I may be the most handsome and why I'm the one speaking, but I am the co-chair, but I have plenty of help from another committee of other realtors. So to be fair, you just had me because I'm the handsome one.
But well, that's true.
That notwithstanding, we got together as a group and kind of figured there were quite a few other charities that have been organized to benefit victims, first responders, those kinds of things. That the people who were kind of below the surface that you don't really see that were really harmed are the retailers of these great stores and restaurants in the Upper Village that were closed between the two disasters for 5 weeks, if not longer, including the holidays and beyond. So they, in essence, lost, in some cases, 40 to 50% of their annual revenue. And these are, for the most part, mom-and-pop stores. These are not chains by any degree. So these people really, really got hurt. So we wanted to put together an event to spotlight them, bring people back to the Upper Village, get people back in the stores, get people back in the restaurants. And so we are providing entertainment. There's a children's area. There are four bands playing, three of which are, probably the best local bands in Santa Barbara.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, Ted, but Tina Chaleski, who's one of the bands, was the singer and the writer of our theme song. She is fantastic.
She is fantastic. She'll be closing Saturday about 5 o'clock. And the other bands are the Brian Titus Trio, who are relatively new and great, and the Paradise Kings, who just won the Central Coast Blues Society contest, who sent them to Memphis a month ago to compete nationally. They're very, very good. Dan Diamond is another local band with the Dairy Queens, and this week they'll be this time around they'll be featuring two musicians from Kenny Loggins' band, as well as longtime Santa Barbara vocalist, singer, terrific person Leslie Limbo. They will be over at Pierre LaFond. The other bands will be in front of Pani Vino starting at 3 o'clock.
And as we just heard before, Pierre LaFond is one of our sponsors. So
yep.
There's the connection all the way around.
Oh, and they've also been very generous. They will be serving sliders. I should mention that one of the great aspects of this is several of the restaurateurs have stepped up and will be providing free food. So Pierre LaFond will be serving sliders. They will have their bar open at happy hour prices all day. Pane Vino will be providing, I'll have to go over this for a second. It's bruschetta and polenta with bolognese sauce. Via Vai will be providing pizza and fried calamari. And Wine and Cheese Shop, which is down there across the street also, will be serving quarter sandwiches all day.
And the Wine and Cheese Shop, I had the owner on the show, on another show I do here, Money Talk, 2 weeks ago. He is another wonderful person who provided free food and drinks to all the responders over the six-week period of the closing.
That's right. They've been very generous.
So they've been very generous. In fact, I understand you still can't pay when you go in there. It's still
that's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
So this event is first of all to bring awareness, but it's also to buy things, isn't it? You're not supposed to not buy, right?
Yes, it is. And I just found out as I was walking in here that Doug Marjoram is providing wines for the retailers to serve in their stores. This just happened. This whole thing, I'm not kidding. This is literally the 12th day of doing this. We have put this together in zero time, and it's worked out fantastically. We just hope everybody comes, enjoys it. We're not raising money. We're not asking for a dollar. Everything is free.
And you're a realtor as well.
I am.
So someone should also buy a house from you when they're there?
We could do that, but we've all kind of agreed as a group that now really is not the time to do that kind of stuff. It's really a time to put the community back together, support our retailers, support each other. It's been as much as we're going to try to have fun at this event, it's still, the background of this is still a terrible tragedy. So you walk a fine line with it.
Yeah, and it's really eye-opening. You see over the last 15 years hashtags with, Boston Strong or, Tampa Strong, and you never think your own city is going to have that name in front of it, Montecito Strong. It's really sort of unnerving every time I see that we are they.
And for those of us who know people who lost their homes, in some cases losing everything, it's life-altering. It truly is.
And one of the things that I didn't know, and a lot of people didn't know, people thought of Montecito as, a haven for rich people. And that's not true. There are many people who were severely impacted by the storm that are not rich. And so, I've heard, questions about why is there so much money raising. Well, the people lost everything. And some had no insurance.
That's true.
And some had insurance that they may not have insurance, which is a whole other story.
Well, that's a whole other story. And we know people who are not getting responses from their insurance companies that they were expecting. It's a whole other subject.
What do you think, in the last couple of minutes here, we've got you. What do you think of the outlook for Montecito? Is it going to take a while for us to come back?
I'm actually amazed. I ride my bike around pretty much every weekend and not intentionally looking for your bad things, but it's kind of unavoidable in some areas. I'm actually amazed that things are coming back as quickly as they are. I'm actually astounded considering the level of damage, the sheer amount of mud and how far it traveled is. I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people working on this every single day. So the roads are all clear with the exception of, I think it's two bridges that are out, but they're obviously working on those. How many dump trucks do we see a day? Hundreds of taking mud out. We have friends of ours who are planning on rebuilding, and they're already talking to people. They have structural engineers for another family that's saving half their house. So it's going to take a while, but also remember that 90% of Montecito was undamaged and is just as beautiful as it ever was.
And this is sort of a perverse thing to say. We probably won't have another fire for 50 years because nothing's up there.
If then.
Well, and so the irony of it is we've never been as safe if you look at it from a fire standpoint.
That's true. And also if you happen to take a look at what the Army Corps of Engineers have done in the last couple of weeks with the creeks, and I don't have any scientific background in this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were 20 or 30 times the volume they were before this happened. And now, in a lot of cases, they're completely rock-lined with these thousands of boulders that came down from top to bottom. So, I can't say that people are going to be safe, but it's not the creeks that they used to be.
Yeah, I got so frightened. I was thinking about moving back to New York, but I didn't want to get my New York accent back, so I decided to stay. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for what you're doing. And we'll see, hopefully we'll see everyone in the Upper Village, and that is at 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock this Saturday.
That's correct.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara's been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tina Itkonen, Associate Professor of Education and Political Science at CSU. Did I do that okay?
You did great.
Okay. And Liz King, Professor of Art at CSU Channel Islands. And I'm going to be taking Finnish lessons.
Wonderful, wonderful. I have the longest word for you. Are you ready?
What's the longest word?
And then we have a high-stakes exam afterwards. Yeah. The longest word is lentokone suihkuturbiini moottori apumekaanikko aliupseeri oppilas. That's 61 letters.
And what does it mean?
It means, this is a very handy word, by the way, if you travel to Helsinki anytime soon. It's airplane, jet, turbine, engine, auxiliary mechanic, non-commissioned officer student.
Yeah, but that's not a word. That's a sentence.
It actually exists. The position exists.
No, but that's cheating. Come on.
It's for show, I suppose, but anyway, it is a real word.
We were talking before the show because I had gone to Iceland a couple of years ago, and Iceland is an incredibly difficult language, and we're sort of discussing which one's more difficult, Finnish or Icelandic.
Well, of course, we Finns want to be number one in where we can, being a small nation, so we think our language is actually the hardest. But actually, Finnish has its own language group. It's a Finno-Ugrian language. It's related to Estonian and Hungarian. And then Finnish. So, and there are some other more extinct languages like Vetok and others. But yeah, it has its own language group.
Over the years on this show, we've shared with our listeners the international rankings of countries in terms of education performance. And if I recall, Finland is usually number one among nations with terms of. Success in education. So whether you're number two or number one, you know, I think maybe this year Singapore beat you out. But why does Finland do so well on these international exams?
Finland indeed has gone down in PISA in particular.
PISA, that's what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, Program of International Student Achievement, which is the OECD international test. I think what Finland did was a long-term investment in education. Education in Finland used to be very sort of elitist experience, but in 1970-ish, there was a law passed, which is called, we call it the Basic Education Act, the Perusopetuslaki, and what it did was it made education available for everyone, and the whole sort of idea about education policy was equity. It wasn't achievement. It wasn't sort of let's go and be the best in everything. It was really about equity, and it was an investment over time. So in 20 years when the PISA then came, or over 20 years of time when all of a sudden Finland did show up as number one, it even surprised the Finns. Because it was like, well, what have we done? I mean, seriously. And the reason is that the between school difference or variation is the smallest in these PISA countries. So it doesn't matter where you go to school, because the whole investment was in equity over achievement.
You know, it's pretty sad. In the 60s, California had the best school system probably in the world. And it was based on equity.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would get the same education, and the system in the higher levels was basically free. And over the years, it changed. And I think this year on the PISA test, this country was number 32. So there is some empirical evidence to support both what you did, what Finland did, which is to make it more inclusive, and what we did, which is just the opposite, and the results are clearly that this is not good for equality.
Yeah, and out of fairness to the United States, I mean, it is a very, very big country with a collection of states. So if each state was to be pieced out of the test, it would show a different, you know, sort of results per state, but when it aggregated, the U.S., yeah, indeed, does not do well.
And you have a much more homogeneous country.
We do, and although with the changes with EU ever since that the borders opened with the collapse of USSR, as well as the refugee populations that we, out of our commitment to social justice as a nation, take, we have seen differences. And now the education policy question is, how do you support then youngsters who have a different background, linguistically and culturally and socially? And so that's at the table at the education policy conversations at the Ministry of Education.
Now, we had planned to do this show before the catastrophes that that hit both Ventura and Santa Barbara over the last 2 months. And during that time, you and Liz, Dr. King, had a show that called Finland at 100. And that's not an exam, 100. This is the number of years. So tell us a little bit about the show.
Liz? Well, the show came about because of the 100 years of independence of Finland. And the idea came about through the idea of Dr. Irina Kostacci, who's an art historian in the art program. And she runs the gallery that is in the John Sporbroom Library. It's a small gallery on the second floor. And her and Tina were talking about having a show to celebrate this. And Irina is actually a resident director in Florence this year at through the CSU International Program, and she approached me to curate the show in her absence. And I've known Tina since 2005. We started at the university quite early, and I love Tina's passion for her country, and we collaborated on the show, and I helped curate it.
How's your Finnish?
Yeah, here's the high statistics exam.
I can read that long word, but I cannot say it.
You know, Dr. Beck was on the show early on when she took over the school, and one of the things she said, which I have had the fortunate experience of seeing and hearing many of the professors, that the school is different from most schools is because you have a very collaborative way of doing things. So here you are, someone who is a professor of education and political science, someone who is a professor of art, getting together, and it's not strange for the school, is it?
No. One of our mission pillars actually is to be interdisciplinary, both within our own community as faculty, but also among our students and the education they receive. And a second very important mission pillar at our university and important to us both personally is our commitment to international issues and mission. And so we both taken students abroad from our university.
I've taken students to Paris on six different occasions to study.
It's a tough job, but someone has to do it, right?
It's a real tough one, Paris.
And I've taken students to Finland, which, of course, is not as sexy as Paris, but they came anyway.
But it's been wonderful to expose students
to
that.
So if I were, you know, which I would be the last person you'd ask to help curate some type of celebration of a 100-year-old nation, why art? You are a history person, right? Wouldn't it have been more logical to do it through the lens of history rather than art?
Possibly. I think another connection that Liz and I have is that in our other lives, we are both musicians as well. So Liz played flute at UCLA. Right,
that's
correct. At the marching band, they're wonderful pictures. And in my other life, and going through school system in Finland, I sang through my youth and toured all over. And so culture is so important for Finland. For a small country, I think the national identity pretty much in 1835, when Kalevala was collected, the national epic from oral traditions into actual written. A form of Finnish that helped create the sort of the cultural identity. And then, of course, Jean Sibelius, composer that, you know, is a household name these days, I hear. And so culture is very, very important for our history and our identity.
So what are some of the items that were in the show?
It celebrated the design of Finland. There were many photographs that were taken by not only Tina, but her colleagues and friends in Finland, of nature, of the architecture, the buildings. I've found through curating the show that nature is a huge part of Finn's life. They have something called the Everyman's Rule, that every Finn can go out in nature and explore, and everything's open to them. So it celebrated that.
If you have a flashlight, right?
Yeah, and you have to have the sort of the ski poles with ready for the ice.
Yes.
And many of the things that we all know about, there's some the designer Mary Mecco, who creates these bold prints that are on fabric and dresses and everything. And we had a wall that was dedicated to that, and a mannequin and a dress. Even Target has come out, collaborated with Mary Mecco to create dresses and other things.
Mary Mecco for Target.
And we had a wall where we celebrated famous Finns, Rennie Harlan, who directed Die Hard, and was on that wall. Esa-Pekka Salonen, who is a
former music director of LA Philharmonic, for multiple years.
And Alvar Aalto.
Hockey people.
Famous designer. Eero Saarinen, who designed the St. Louis Arch. So we're, you know, celebrating all aspects of things Finnish. So it wasn't just, you know, Finnish artwork or anything like that. It was just like a culmination of a lot of different things.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular Fresh Juice Bar, or get a coffee drink or fresh squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafon Market in Delhi, open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tina Itkonen, Associate Professor of Education and Political Science at CSU Channel Islands, and Liz King, Professor of Art at CSU Channel Islands. So 2017 was the 100 year that makes it 1917. What happened in 1916? What was Finland before? Pardon my ignorance.
Finland was part of Russia in 1916. So Finland has a history of being part of other countries. It was part of Sweden for 600 or 700 years, depends which history book you read. And in 1809, Sweden had a war with Russia, and Finland was then traded to Russia at the time. And again, Finland's position, sharing a 1,000-kilometer border with Russia, it gave the buffer for the Tsar against Napoleon at the time. And then, of course, national identity increased. And Finland, by the way, it had autonomy during this time. It was considered a grand duchy. So it gave sort of the practice of being independent by being autonomous under the Russian rule. But then around 1916, probably, there was a huge strike. Finland was very, very poor, oppressed under the Tsar Nikolai's rule. And so I'm sure there were plans for
independence. And they had bigger fish to fry, the Russians, at that point.
And then, of course, Russians had their Bolshevik Revolution. Right. So Finland, of course, thought, hey, this is a great window of opportunity right here. Let's just come independent.
But during World War II, there was some pressure, wasn't there?
So 1939, the Soviets, we called them Soviets at the time, attacked Finland. For the same reason, they needed the land to then have buffer against Hitler, who was making advancements, you know, Norway, other places, and so Finland then fought for Soviet Union during the Second World War.
So let's talk a little bit about both of you personally. First of all, I am amazed that you don't have you have less of an accent from where you came from than I do.
Thank you. You tell that to my ex-husband.
he's American?
Yes.
So when you go back to Finland, do they ask where you're from? Will they know?
Oh no. When I go back to Finland, it comes back. Yes, and then if I'm in Finland for a week, I get my Finnish accent in my English.
Okay. So, and how did you get here? Not to the studio, but how did you get to be a professor of art? What was, when you were growing up, did that something that interested you, education, art?
Art always interests me from a young age, so I was always drawing, and I never thought I was going to have anything to do with art, actually. When I got to UCLA, I thought, well, I'm going to need to choose a major that gets me a real job, you know. But it turns out I took a class in art, and it was so wonderful. And I talked to my dad, and he says, well, do what you love. And I never looked back, and I just kept taking classes, and I just
Yeah, art is where the money is, isn't it?
Well, now it is, yes. Yeah. Actually, it's funny because at the university I teach art on the computer. I teach web design and computer animation, but I do come from a fine arts background, and many of our students are getting jobs in web because, the internet's not going away. So
is there snobbery among the older generation of art historians and professors about that whole development, that's not really art, or has it been accepted as?
I think it is being accepted. Maybe there's a few, but I think, you know, you have to accept that it's part of our being now.
Yeah. So. And you're from what area?
I am from Los Angeles, and I moved up to Camarillo when I got the job, full-time job, in 2002.
And where did you go to graduate school?
UCLA. So you did the undergrad whole... and grad at UCLA.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. And do you follow the football team?
Yes. My husband more so, but yeah.
So, and when did you come, Tina?
I came to University of Oregon in 1986 for 1 year as an exchange person from University of Helsinki, and I'm still on that trip. Yeah.
You didn't? Yeah. I had the same thing. I came on vacation here at the beginning of 1999. My wife and I drove down the coast and we bought a house here. So I'm still on that trip too.
Yeah.
It's been 19-year vacation. I know it happens sometimes. So you already had graduated college at that point?
No. I was in a master's program at the University of Helsinki, but I had an option to. I wanted to study abroad. I never did that during high school. And so I thought this would be good, and there was an opportunity to apply for a scholarship, and I got it. And they said, I have a choice between North Carolina and Oregon, and I hadn't heard of either. So I looked at the map, and I saw Pacific Ocean, so I chose Oregon. And then we landed there, and it was raining, and I didn't see one palm tree. And I thought, well, this looks a lot like Finland. But I ended up having absolutely an amazing time at University of Oregon, where I switched my majors, what I was studying, and ended up finishing my degree there.
And you actually have taught students with disabilities.
Yes.
Which is probably the most challenging part of teaching. That was in the high schools?
It was right here in Santa Barbara, San Marcos High School.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was something that, was it like, you know, you join the Army and they say, what do you do? And you say, I'm a lawyer. And they say, you can peel potatoes. Did they choose you to do this because you had a background in it? Or was it because you were just smart? I mean, did you study disabilities?
That was my degree from University of Oregon. I was very lucky to study with some very, very leaders of the field at the time. And just got fascinated sort of what was happening with the field, but also the whole notion that it doesn't matter what your background is, that you have the right to be fully included in society. And that whole idea and philosophy really spoke to me, and which is why I wanted to stay and finish my degree there. And then got an opportunity to work in San Marcos High School. My employer was Santa Barbara County Education Office that had a huge philosophy based on inclusive education. So I got to sort of implement what I had learned with support from my employer, and really, really had a wonderful time.
How do they deal with avoiding stigmatization? Are there special classes for children that need help, and does that stigmatize them among their friends, or is there a way to do this in a way that doesn't cause them trouble socially?
There are different ways. I think one big thing is how adults model treatment of individuals, and it doesn't matter who you're talking about, whether it's an individual with disabilities or individual with just different other type of background. Some modeling is a huge thing. I think these days there are some classes and awareness kinds of workshops. I think the new generation of children are better off because this was they've grown up in schools now that are, you know, included in the sense that it's not an issue as it was perhaps in my generation.
And AHA basically, AHA was founded, ironically, in 19 years ago after the Columbine shooting, and is in all the high schools and junior high schools in town dealing with things like bullying, anti-bullying, mm-hmm. Social-emotional intelligence, things that make it possible, I think, for people to be more accepting. And I think, you know, this is a community that has embraced what AHA does, and we hope that is a it's a safer environment. My first grandchild needed significant help, and you know, when she was very young, I saw no issues among the friends in class and she was severely need of help, and it was really heartwarming to see the kids accept someone that was different. Mm-hmm.
I teach a class right now which is a cross-listed special education and psych for an undergraduate upper division class called Individuals with Disabilities in Society. And some of those students in that class will go into teaching, but the majority of them will be supervisors and employers. And it's the whole idea that, you know, that your society is inclusive and will remain inclusive. And statistically, some of you will be parents of children with disabilities. So let's just think about respect, access, and diversity and how to embrace all three.
We've had both superintendents of education for the county here in the last couple of years. And both of them, when I asked what your priority was about inclusiveness, and mostly on a social level, that is to have people of every economic and socioeconomic background be able to get along. But I think this is part of it, to be a community that's really well-functioning. You need to have kids who are accepting of everybody else. And, you know, this goes to LGBT. It goes to kids with, you know, reading problems and unfortunately, kids with, you know, emotional problems that manifest themselves in ways that we saw in Florida last week, which is, you know, the much more serious end of this problem. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with Tina Ikonen, Associate Professor of Education and Political Science at CSU Channel Islands, and Liz King, Professor of Art at CSU Channel Islands. Now, Liz is being very modest because Liz worked on Monday Night Football.
I worked at a company called Novacom, and president of that was John Ridgway. And while I was there, I was fortunate enough to work on some kind of high-profile accounts, and we did the graphics and things for Monday Night Football, CBS Sunday Morning, Animal Planet, et cetera. So
you did the chyrons and stuff.
Yeah, some of those, yeah. Yeah,
my wife worked at CBS, too. She was a producer at CBS News.
Oh, cool, yeah.
So I know the word Chiron. I don't know what it means, but I know the word. I think it's. I think Chiron is a Finnish word, isn't it?
Could be.
Yeah, but they did a lot of broadcast graphics and all those fancy moving graphics that are now taken for granted. But
so
yeah.
you had a career before teaching, or this was at the same time?
No, before. Yes. So I worked in the industry just for a little bit before I...
And was it in New York or was it in L.A.?
In L.A.
And you obviously like what you do. It's as exciting as it was working in television?
Oh, yes. It's so... I love teaching. I mean, I love working with students and kind of telling them some more stories about about times when I worked and trying to get them ready for their careers and telling them how competitive it is and that they have to work hard and... And it's great to see them grow in their experiences and learn. So,
you know, the university's mission statement has a sentence: multicultural and international perspective. And it's so on point. The two of you are here. It couldn't be a better example of multicultural international perspective than what you've been doing in the art show and in terms of. Now, do you work together besides the art show? Is there any collaboration where you get the students together when there's something that's relevant?
No, we don't work together typically. No. I mean, the show was really the first time that we actually sort of worked.
Yeah,
we had a
concert together, but
that's right. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, it was just something that we decided to do is have a concert. Tina is a wonderful singer, operatic singer, and I play the flute. And we have another colleague in math. Jesse Elliott, who plays, he's a virtuoso pianist, and we decided just to have a collaboration at an evening. It was called Love, Betrayal, and Death, and we chose different pieces for that, and we performed.
Did you do the love or the death one?
I think the love.
we each performed in each of the three acts,
yeah.
But it's I love opera, and you know the story in every opera. There's like some love and there's some betrayal, and typically somebody dies in the opera. So that's kind of the inspiration for that theme.
One of the things that distinguishes CSU, Channel Islands, and it's clear based on our conversation, is that if it makes sense, try it, which is not true at necessarily UCLA or UCSB or
always encouraged at our university, and I think that's one reason a lot of us are there is because we have the opportunity to create interdisciplinary courses. We have opportunities to collaborate on shows like we did, and just if you have a great idea, you can make it happen. I happen to also teach a course called The Science of Art and the Art of Science, which is with a professor of biology, Eric Fleming, and we teach biology students and art students and whoever else wants to take the class about all the different aspects of biology and art and how they are combined. The course is actually named after a quote from Leonardo da Vinci, who said, "Study the art of science and the science of art." So, and we just got together over coffee and decided to do this. So, all these collaborations come to life. It's amazing.
I have to read the course description because I'm not clear. I understand the nexus, but I'm going to get there.
Okay.
But no, it's our university is very unique in that it really, I think, embraces our four mission pillars. And essentially, I mean, 2005, when I started there, I couldn't believe it. This is my second career. Higher ed, it really is my second career. So literally, when you have an idea and people say, "Oh, that's a great idea. Go try it. Go do it." And it's sort of like, oh, okay.
And it's not, and there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of roadblocks or anything. Yeah. I mean, you can make it happen if you really pursue it, and they're very open to it. So,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, when I took students to Finland, nobody had ever done it. Obviously, it's kind of north up there, and so it's like, okay, well, that's great. And so you have to go through, of course, the process of applying, so liability issues and things of that nature. So yes, our students are protected when we take them abroad. But other than that, it's sort of like you create your itinerary, your program, your kind of like goals, what you want students to get out of it, and off we went.
And it's not like you're just doing freewheeling stuff. You also do academic stuff. And you won the American Education Research Association Dissertation Award for your book, The Role of Interest Groups in National Special Education Policy.
Yeah, back in 2004. That's an old one. That was initially when I got my degree out here at UCSB.
I love dissertations whose title is so long I have no idea what it means. It's like almost like a Finnish word. It's just stretched out.
Well, I had an absolutely wonderful mentor, Lorraine McDonald, and also from political science, and then Mike Gerber from the School of Education side, both Mike in education, special ed policy, and Lorraine McDonald in education policy. And having worked in the school system, I just got really interested in why do things happen? Why is the same special ed law implemented so differently in different states that I have had the opportunity to live in? And just out of that came the interest to study the actual policy and politics part of what happens in classrooms.
So how come I'm sitting here drinking a Starbucks coffee and both of you are drinking water when I was told that the per capita use of coffee in Finland is number one in the world?
Yes, and
you should have seen what she drank right before that.
I know. I did have lots of coffee. Yes, Finland is number one per capita. See, I told you Finland wants to be number one as many things as we can. So we have the quirky sports. That's where we're number one. And per capita is also... we're number one in the per capita. It's 12 kilos a year per capita, and U.S. coffee consumption, believe it or not, is the 21st in the world with only 3.1 kilograms per capita a year.
You mentioned quirky sports. You have it's not Monday Night Football. It's wife throwing. Is that?
Oh no! And that's wife carrying. We don't.
Sorry.
We were not allowed the throwing of wives.
I see.
We only throw the Nokia phones because when Nokia tanked, that became a sport. You see.
Actually, Nokia was a pretty big part of your GDP, wasn't it?
Yes, and then they tanked. And yes. So throwing your old Nokia phone became a sport. And they're actual championship events.
You're not joking.
I'm not joking. Seriously. Wife carrying, that's a real sport. Real. Hobby horse is now big.
What's that?
Well, the little stick with the horse head that you sort of run and jump with. Mm. They have championships on that.
And how many people live in Finland?
5.5 million.
So it's a small country.
Yes. Size of Montana, though.
Yeah. Well, Iceland has 330,000 people. And I don't know if it's a quirk that just their country has, but you're listed in the phone book by first name. Which is really strange.
But you know why? Because their last name depends if you're daughter or son.
Yeah.
Because if you're daughter, your last name ends with dottir, which is daughter. Mm. And if you're a son, your last name ends with son. So like two siblings may not have the same last name. So that's why you go by first name.
Yeah. And also they have a directory system where you can check to make sure that you're not dating your cousin. Because they were living there for 1,100 years. No, really, I'm serious. Everyone is probably, I don't know, when you live in a small place for 1,100 years, I think on that note, you're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and AHA new brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Tina Ikonen, Associate Professor of Education and Political Science at CSU Channel Islands, and Liz King, Professor of Art at CSU Channel Islands. And we've been talking about a whole host of subjects, including their collaboration in a 100-year celebration of Finland and the work that Liz did in television, and the fact that I still can't speak Icelandic or Finnish.
Finnish.
How do you measure success today with children, with students? You know, the Americans tried to, well, at least part of America is trying to consider putting in a system where they rank schools about in terms of how much money the graduates make. You know, how do you, you know, what's happening to the liberal arts notion that to be a Renaissance person, you really ought to look at knowledge for knowledge's sake? And both of you teach subjects that I would imagine are more likely to be criticized by some as not being on point for income levels, but rather to become a better person. Is that an issue that comes up?
I think, you know, measuring success, of course, it's what do our graduates do in the School of Education at CSU Channel Islands. Our teacher graduates actually do get jobs, and that's a very important outcome. We also have, at the School of Education, we have a bilingual authorization. So that teachers who are out there now may be working in a bilingual environment but not fully authorized can come back and get their authorization. So those are important sort of outcomes. But in my classes, particularly I think in my undergrad classes, I just want people to sort of find something that sparks their interest. You know, I don't want to just give A's for the sake of people reciting whatever they need to learn as far as their learning outcomes in the class. There has to be some personal connection. So that's why in my classes I have a lot of choice. I have a lot of different ways for people to approach things based on their learning style or interest or major, because I do teach undergrads where they have multiple majors. Just, you know, find something that speaks to you and then follow that passion, and life kind of unfolds sometimes in unexpected ways. I don't know about you, Liz.
Yeah, and for art, it's about being creative. And I think it used to be, you know, the idea of the starving artist, one that, you know, only artists can show in galleries and all that. But, you know, there's so many jobs out there, like I mentioned before about, you know, art on the computer. People are doing so many different things, so it's about being creative, I think, is where the success comes from.
And the kids are the kids. You know, I taught for 12 years at City College. Some of them are older than me. The students are lucky to have an environment where they can not be sitting in a lecture hall with 500 people taking notes that they're going to spurt back. So the class size is pretty small too, isn't it?
Very small.
Very small. I have a class, my largest class is 40 students, and that to me is very large. But we still, I always tell parents that visit the school, and I tell the students that, you know, it's really getting a private education at a public university system where class sizes are small and your professor knows you by name.
So I already have my degrees, but is it too late for me to go back as a student? It sounds fascinating.
Come back. Yeah. We're a great campus, wonderful university.
Love to have you.
Thank you so much, Tina and Liz. You guys are great. The school is just a wonderful asset for Santa Barbara. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week.